It's been many, many times. I mean, I've spoken about this many, many years, about the connection between the last word of last week's parsha and the first word of this week's parsha. The last word in last week's parsha is the word nechoshes, copper. That all the pegs of the chutz were all made of copper. The very first word in this week's parsha is viatol. Viatol tzav has been esau, the yishkamem ben esau. It's well known that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned once throughout the entire parsha. Tetzaveh does not include Moshe Rabbeinu's name once. The only remez to Moshe Rabbeinu being here is the word Viatol. Viatol Tetzaveh is Meisol. It's mentioned at the beginning of Parak Chav Chaz. Viatol HaKrevi Lechazar Nechicha. It says the word Atol, but it never uses the word Moshe Rabbeinu throughout this entire parsha. The Yalkut Ruvani brings down an amazing medrash, and I'm not going to go through the whole thing right now, but it deals with the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu himself was a Gilgal. Moshe Rabbeinu himself was not just Moshe as we know him. He wasn't even just Moshe. Moshe, Shem, and Hevel. As other people might know him, that's the Mem, Shin, Hey. Moshe, Shem, and Hevel. Moshe Rabbeinu was comprised of two other neshamos, Noach and Shes. And that's what it means by last week's parsha, Nechoshes, Noach, and Shes, Viato. And you, Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a connection between their neshamos. The only problem is, why bring that up now? Why are we quoting the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was connected to Noach and Shem now over any other time? What does that have to do with anything? Or what are we speaking about? Why do we bring this up over here? So Chassam Sofer brings down a mushel. He brings down a parable. His mushel is to a king. His king took 1,000 kikar of gold. Huge, huge amounts of gold. He put all this gold into a massive kiln. And he burned down the gold into the purest, most beautiful gold, the shiniest gold you would ever see. 1,000 with all its impurities and all the problems with it, burned it down to one pure thing of gold. With that pure thing of gold, he created a massive menorah. And it was a beautiful menorah, one of the most beautiful menorahs, if not the most beautiful menorah anyone had ever seen. It shone like the sun. He gave that menorah over to his kids. And as he gave it over to his kids, he warned them, you have to use only the best oil for this menorah. Nothing else will do. You can't use your leftover oil from other things. You can't use dirty oil. You can't use stuff like that. You have to use your absolute best oil for this, because you don't want to ruin such a beautiful menorah. You don't want to do that. You saw how much time and how much effort it took for me to make it look this good, for me to make such a beautiful thing. You have to. You have no choice. You have to use that. It's like getting this really nice car and then putting in regular unleaded gasoline inside it. You get a beautiful car. If you have that type of a car, you're going to have to use premium. There's no choice. Because if you don't, it's just going to ruin the engine. The whole engine is made for all this beautiful gas. You're giving it the worst type of gas. The nimshal is the following. The neshama of Hevel, Hevel's original neshama, was an unbelievably beautiful neshama. It was a pure neshama with nothing wrong in it. Unfortunately, it was killed. And there was a pagam, some type of something happened to this soul, and it had to go through an oven, had to go through a kiln, had to bring itself back to its pristine state, to the state that it was in before anything happened to it. So it entered inside Shes. This neshama became part of Shes, who is the next son of Adam Rishon, born 130 years after Hevel had been killed. And it went through Dor Enosh. Dor Enosh is when the people started getting up and they started worshipping Avodah Zarah. It went into Noach through the Dor HaMabul and through the door of Vaga, set through the Mabul, and while there was Migdal Vaga, it went out through all of that, and the Neshama took in all the things that were going on around it, and through all of it, it finally came out being burned down to Moshe Rabbeinu's awesome Neshama. The Neshama was burned down to a Neshama that you can't imagine, the most beautiful menorah out there, and that was Moshe Rabbeinu's Neshama. His Neshama was unbelievably beautiful. HaKadosh Baruch Hu warned Bnei Yisrael, if you go near this menorah, you're going to come near Moshe Rabbeinu's Neshama. You cannot act stupid. Anything that you say or anything that you do that is dumb in the eyes of Moshe Rabbeinu, he will kill you. He's not a normal human being. He's not the guy that you can play around with and make a joke in front of. He's not that type of guy. He will kill you. He's got a face that shines. His mind is only thinking Torah thoughts. Anything you do that is shaykh to Moshe Rabbeinu, that is insulting to Moshe Rabbeinu, you'll die. Doesn't Rav Yoram insult Moshe Rabbeinu by not going to him? A hole opens up in the ground and swallows them up. Aaron and Miriam say one word about Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship with his wife, immediately they're struck with saras.
Why didn't the worst person, Diego, is up immediately?
Because he wasn't there. That's the reason why. When it's directed at Moshe Rabbeinu, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with Erech HaPayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can act with some sort of delaying his anger so that it doesn't affect them immediately. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't have that ability. Moshe Rabbeinu will immediately do something. It's not even his fault. It's going to be immediate retribution. You have no choice. And that's the pshat. By Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to act as Shemen Zayas Zoch. You have to be the purest olive oil, or else you'll soil them. Shemen is Shase, Moshe, Noach. Those are the names of Nechoshes and Beatah of Moshe Rabbeinu being here. Lahalos Ner Tavid, if you want him, for him to be around you at all times, for his Torah to be around you at all times, and if not, if you mess it up, then he's going to have to go. Which is exactly what happened by Meimariva when they complained to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, Shimu no Hamorim. As soon as he affected them, it was either all of Bnei Yisrael die, or Moshe Rabbeinu himself dies. There was no choice. Moshe Rabbeinu chose for himself to die. He chose not to go into Eretz Yisrael, which is exactly what happened. That's number one. That's the first part of the parsha and the connection between the Nechoshes and the Atah, between Noach, Shase, and Moshe Rabbeinu. Why it's put over here with the whole parsha of the Menorah of Yichu Elecha Shemen Zai Zoch causes more lagos near Talmud. It's strange because let's think. What did the Aron represent in the base of, in the Mishkan? What did the Aron represent? The what? No, it wasn't. It had to represent something that the Bnei Yisrael would do themselves. So we all know that the Shulchan was Parnassa. Shulchan was supposed to be Parnassa, right? What was the Aron? Further.
Mm-hmm.
What was inside it?
Luchos.
The Luchos. Right. The Sefer Torah was written right next to it, right there. The Sefer Torah next to it. Aron Kodesh was supposed to represent Torah. What did the menorah represent? What was the menorah supposed to be? More than Achdus. It's supposed to be Chochmah. Harotze l'Hachkim, if you want to be wise, Yadrim, turn yourself to the south because the menorah was in the south. It's supposed to be Chochmah. What's the difference between the Chochmah that we talk about, really, it's Chochmah HaTorah, and the Torah, which is represented by the Aron? What's the difference between the Aron and the menorah? Why do you have two things that are merames to the Torah? Why would you need both?
We need all of them. Wealth
was Parnassah, that's the Shulchan. The Shulchan with the bread and everything inside it, that's supposed to be wealth. Yeah, so the real question is, so what's the real pshat? What's the real pshat behind it? So what, and that's number one. Why do we have both? It's number one. Number two, what's it doing here right before we make the Kohanim? Parsha Tzav, as we all know, is about the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. What in the world are we talking about the menorah over here? We already spoke about the menorah in last week's parsha. We don't even talk about lighting it up. What is this doing here over here? Shouldn't it be later on or earlier, not in the middle of Tetzaveh, or in the beginning of Tetzaveh? This should be about the Kohen Gadol. And that's it. It's the Parsha of Kuna. It has nothing to do with the menorah. I know, okay, the Kohen lit the menorah. The Kohen also did the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash. We're not talking about Korbanos over here. What's this doing here in the beginning of Parsha Tetzaveh? Number three, why is it the Yikhu Elecha? Take for yourself. Well, but everything else it says V'asisa, you should make. What's the Yikhu Elecha they should take for you? What are we referring to? What are we talking about? When we talk about this specifically, where did this come from? So those are the three questions we're going to ask regarding the menorah itself. Nidaren, Lamed Chasam and Aleph, says that originally the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu alone. Nobody else was supposed to get the Torah. The Torah was given directly to Moshe Rabbeinu and no one else. The wording in the pasuk is, Psol lecha, shnei lukos amanim. Make for yourself two lukos avanim. Ksav lecha. Write down for yourself. It's not ksav lechem or psol lechem. It's lecha. It's a singular form of for you, Moshe Rabbeinu. Everything is for you. Moshe Rabbeinu had tovas ayin, and he gave over that chokmah called pilpul to Bnei Yisrael, and he told Bnei Yisrael, I'm willing to share with you some chokmah. I'm willing to share with you some wisdom that you might not have had. HaKadosh Baruch Hu only wanted Bnei Yisrael to learn halachos psukos, halachos that were paskined already, different halachos that they would have known. They would have learned the Rambam. That's what they would have had. They would have had the Rambam. They would have had halachos that were paskined for them, and that's all Bnei Yisrael would have gotten. They never would have learned Gemara. They never would have learned how to get to those halachos. They just would have been told, here's what Moshe Rabbeinu says, here's what you do, and that's that. Moshe Rabbeinu had Tovas Ayin and told Bnei Yisrael, I don't want to leave you guys in the dark. I want to give you guys the why. I want to give you guys the how. I want to give you guys the what. I want to tell you all about it. And he gave them what's called Pilpul. He gave them everything they needed to know. And that's the Pshat, Midos, the Midos that we learn in the Torah. That's Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Bishlush Shem, Midos, Midos, that's our New Testament, Kalvachomer, Gzera Shava, etc., all of those. Drushos, Midrushim, Ramazim in the text, Pilpul.
all of these things were going to be shayach to the leaders of Klal Yisrael, and they could share it with the people as much as they wish. If our school feels like putting it out there for anybody to be able to read it in English, that's mutter. Moshe Rabbeinu gave it over to the people and said, it's not only going to be me, it's not only going to be Yoshua, it's not only going to be Othniel ben Kenaz, it's not going to go down just for the leaders. Everyone's going to have the ability to understand the rest of the Torah. That's the pshat. Moshe saw that he was able to do this, that he was able to share it with Klal Yisrael. Where did he see that? If he was given the Torah for himself, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically said, Sol lecha, ksav lecha, where in the world did Moshe Rabbeinu get from that he would be able to share with anybody else? Where did he get that from? So it's obvious. The Arum stands for Torah Shebechsav. The Luchos were inside it. The Sefer Torah was right next to it. That shayach to everyone. The Asu, the Pasuk says, they all made the Arum. Everyone donated gold to the Arum. Everyone was involved. Everyone did so, but not so by the menorah. The menorah was not that way. The menorah is Torah Shebechsav. How was the menorah made? The menorah was a great big thing of gold. Moshe Rabbeinu was told, make the menorah. It wasn't even Bezalel. Moshe Rabbeinu was told to make the menorah. Moshe Rabbeinu said, he blanched. He said, I have absolutely no idea what to do. Absolutely no idea what to do. God help me. And God said, just throw it in the fire. I'll take it out. It's Moshe Rabbeinu alone. There's no one else involved here. It's not gold collected for all Klal Yisrael like the Aron Kodesh was. It's Moshe Rabbeinu himself made the menorah. It's Moshe Rabbeinu himself that was involved, because that's Torah Shabbal Peh. The Aron is Torah Shabbat. The menorah is Torah Shabbal Peh. That's the huge idea. That's the idea of Kaftor Batarach. The menorah had detail like no other Kli in the Mishkan did. The Aron was a box. The Kruvim, granted, they looked like angels, but that was all they were. There was no detail within the Kruvim. The Kahoros was a straight sheet of metal. The Mizbeach, they were straight boxes. That's all they were. The menorah had Kaftor Batarach. They had these little tiny things going around the sides of the menorah that went up. It looked beautiful. It had detail. What's the pshat? Because Torah Shebaal Peh goes into the details. That's exactly what Torah Shebaal Peh is all about. That's what the idea is behind it. So the Atah, said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you, Moshe Rabbeinu, Tetzaves B'nei Yisrael. Here's the remnants. If you want to tell B'nei Yisrael, you're allowed to command B'nei Yisrael. All of you can take Shemen Zayizach. You can all learn about that Torah Shebaal Peh. Lahalos Ner Tamid, to make sure that everybody is learning Torah at all times, that everybody's cosming it constantly, everybody's going over it, and everybody will be able to understand it. That's up to you, Moshe Rabbeinu. If you want it, says the Chassam Sofer, you can give it over to them. That's the remez. That's the remez that Moshe Rabbeinu was allowed to give over Torah Shebaal Peh over to B'nai Yisrael. That's where he got it from. The Netziv adds on to this idea. It's always a wonder. You see two separate achronim talking about the exact same subjects, the exact same lines, really, but two totally different ideas. They're really the exact same things. He brings down a medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu was told that Aaron was going to be the Kohen Gadol. Aaron was told, you're going to be the Kohen Gadol. And Moshe Rabbeinu looked up and he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why? What happened? He was upset. Why can't I be? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, don't worry. You're going to get the Torah. And the Torah is going to be for all generations. And you're going to be the leader of the Torah for all generations. Tell me, what kind of a pious was that? What kind of appeasement was that? Aaron got the kuna, and it's given over to his kids for all time. Were Moshe Rabbeinu's kids leaders for all time? Not at all. His kids didn't even become leaders at all. We don't even know of any other kids of Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't even know of any, I guess you could say, of any ancestors of Moshe Rabbeinu that became leaders. Ever. There was not a single person from Moshe's children that became famous. The one thing that the Gemara says is that Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus comes from Moshe Rabbeinu. You know what happened to Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus? He was put in Cherem toward the end of his life. It's the only Tana that is any sheikhs to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus. It's a long story. Argued about Kendall Shach. No, I'm sorry? Even more so. Yonasan ben Gershom ben Menashe, who's known at the end of Pesel Micha, the priest who worked for Pesel Micha, was a grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's unbelievable. He went the exact other way. We don't know anything about Moshe Rabbeinu's kids. What kind of appeasement? What kind of an appeasement is this to Moshe Rabbeinu? Don't worry, Moshe. You're going to have Torah. He won't. He won't. He's not going to have Torah. It's not going to be the same thing as the Kuna. He did have a legitimate claim. I'm not going to have anything. What's the pshat? And aside from that, Hakre de Lech, bring it to you, Moshe Rabbeinu was told. You yourself, Moshe Rabbeinu, should admit that Aaron is royal for the Kuna Gedola. It sounds like Moshe Rabbeinu agreed to it. What in the world was going on here? We already mentioned the Koach HaTorah Shebechsav is in the Aron. The Torah Baal Peh is in the menorah. Svaros, Pilpul, Chedushim. That's what the menorah was supposed to be. That's why the greatest time of Chedushim was when? At what point was the greatest time when the Tanaim started flourishing? And all of a sudden, the Tanaim, we have them all written down. The greatest time in Torah started flourishing was right after the Nes of Hanukkah. The menorah was lit. And all of a sudden, the Tanaim started springing forth. Hillel had all of a sudden with Beis Hillel, Beis Shammai. And all the Tanaim came from those times right after the menorah. Because they were all shayach to the menorah. When the Aron, by that time, had already been gone. Because the other nations of the world already took the Torah Shabbat Chav, grabbed it for themselves and said, it's ours. It's not just the Jews, it's ours again. That's the Aron Kodesh. The Aron is not ours anymore. It's the menorah that became ours. What's the pshat?
Hashem didn't let the Aron in it?
Bais Sheni did not have Aaron at all. In fact, the end of Bais Rishon did not have Aaron. The Aaron was hidden by King Yoshia, who was the fifth to last king of Malchus Yehuda. The fifth to last king there. Before Nebuchadnezzar ever came down, the Aaron Kodesh was hidden. We still don't know where it was. It was never brought out. The whole line of the Holy Ark being by the Romans and being by the Babylonians or whatever, it's Pachal not Shaykh. Yes, there's a Gemara that seems to say that the Aron was brought to Babel. But it seems very clear that Yoshia hid it somewhere around where the Beis HaMikdash was.
It seems very clear.
And that for sure. Shlomo HaMelech built everything underneath for that reason. There was an Aron that was used for war according to the Ramban. Not everybody agrees with him regarding that. There's a machlokas whether there were two Aronos or just one. But if there was a second one, then you're right. That could have been used for some other reason. And whatever, maybe that was taken. But it did not look like the regular Aron Kodesh. You never had the crew. You couldn't make more than two kruvim. That was a avodah zarah. The only place where you were allowed to have the kruvim was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Otherwise, you're building two golden statues. You can't do that. No, there were Igalei Azal, which were also. The Rav Ben Avot was punished for that. There were two other kruvim added on by Shlomo Melech based on a drush in the Pasuk, but that again was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Beis HaMikdash, never in the Mishkan and never outside that. It's a power. It's an absolute power. So here's pshat. There was a major difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen. Here's the difference. Moshe Rabbeinu was pure Mesora. He was the source of all Halakha. But he was also the greatest Baal Mechadesh and Baal Pilpul that ever existed. He was able to come up with Chidushim that no one could ever think of. He came up with cases and was able to figure out a pshat, an idea, something that no one else could ever compare themselves to. They just looked at it and said, where in the world did you get that from? And he said, I got it from here. He was a Baal Mechadesh like no one. That's in the Dharma Lamed Ches that we mentioned before. He owned Pilpul. Pilpul was his. He gave it over to Klal Yisrael, but his Chidushim trumped all others. And whenever somebody gave a Chidush that argued on Moshe Rabbeinu's, their Chidushim were knocked down. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was masking to the Chidushim that Moshe Rabbeinu said.
When you're off with writing the source material.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. No, it's more than that. To delve into it. Well, you're right. Obviously, it's 40 days. 40 days of HaKadosh Baruch Hu off the Harsina. Obviously helped him a lot.
I hope the answers do. I would change the rules. I win, you lose.
Aaron's Koach was within Svara. He was able to figure things out with logic, but it was human logic. What he did was he compared cases. If this is true over here, then certainly that should be true over there. That was Aaron's logic. That's what he was able to do. He was mechaven to the MS through those types of comparisons. Thus, Aaron defined what should happen by the Sefer Chatzos and Rosh Chodesh Nisan. After his own sons, Nadav and Abihu, were killed, the Sefer Chatzos was burned. Moshe Rabbeinu ran to them and said, what were you thinking? Why did you burn it? You were supposed to eat it. And Aaron said, isn't this what you do in this case? Moshe Rabbeinu, the king of all people, the king of all Kedushim, Aaron was able to beat him with a simple svara. Isn't this what you would do? Granted, in future generations you would do that, but wouldn't you think this would make sense over here? And Moshe Rabbeinu looked at Aaron and said, you're 100% right. You're 100% right. It's the only time Moshe was beaten. The only time he was beaten, Aaron was able to tell him misvara, a hekesh of what to do with the Sefer Chatzos at that time. Lahalacha, lemaisa, we pass them like Moshe Rabbeinu. But at that moment, Aaron was able to come up with a svara that was more than anything else. So Moshe's koach was literally the menorah. He was shayach to the menorah. And therefore, he should have lit up the menorah. His pilpul, his chidushim, that's Moshe Rabbeinu. Aaron's svara is human. It's human. human logic. It's faulty. He makes mistakes. That will always happen. It's possible he'll be able to make something that makes sense once in a while. You'll say, oh, wow, that does make sense. But Moshe Rabbeinu was more than that. Moshe Rabbeinu was the menorah. And he gave that koach over to Klal Yisrael. As we said, V'yichwe lecha was given over to Klal Yisrael. This parsha was thus added on here before Aaron to give a pius, an appeasement to Moshe Rabbeinu. When we get into Aaron and his clothing and how great Aaron HaKohen was, that he had to look great in front of Klal Yisrael. He's the leader, so to speak, of Klal Yisrael, wearing this beautiful clothing. What did Moshe Rabbeinu wear? As the king, what did Moshe Rabbeinu wear? Nothing. Didn't matter. Moshe Rabbeinu was great in and of himself. He himself was so great, it didn't matter what he wore. Aaron, in order to make himself look great, for the Kohen Gadol to look great, the Kohen Gadol has to wear special clothing, because he's not always the biggest Talmid Chacham. But a Talmid Chacham doesn't need the clothing to be a Talmid Chacham. He's a Talmid Chacham on his own. Right before we get into the special clothing, we get into the menorah, and we say that the most important thing that a person could do is learn Torah, know the people, get into these Chedushim, and in the Torah. When you become that Talmid Chacham, you come before the Kohen Gadol. Moshe Rabbeinu, what he represents, is always going to be greater than Aaron. That's why we're putting this specifically before anything else. Because granted, Aaron can win once in a while, but Moshe Rabbeinu's job is way more important, way more cautious, and you don't need clothing to be able to have that. That's the shot, by the way. The Gemara doesn't even ask what Moshe Rabbeinu wore when he served for the first 7 days of the Mishkan before Aaron became the Kohen Gadol, before the Miluim. What was he doing? What was Moshe Rabbeinu doing during the 7 days of Miluim? And the Gemara says, Chol Klavim, a white shirt, a white cloak, She'in Lo Imra, that didn't even have a hem. It didn't matter. He wore the most simple, most nothing clothing, because that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was. It wasn't about what he wore, it was about who he was. Now let's get into the stones just a little bit, okay? Connected to Purim also, since Purim is this Thursday. The stone for Binyamin, if you look on your sheet, is Yashveh. For those that don't have it, do not go. Touch your tongue a little bit. There you go. The stone for Binyamin is Yashveh. Yashveh, according to almost all translations, the very, very bottom, is Jasper. Jasper, Jasper, Jasper. The Jerusalem Bible, which is actually a Christian translation, is Jade. That's because they're idiots. The rest of them is Jasper. Everybody says Jasper. The only one Jasper translates it as a spotted jewel. Right? Spotted jewel is also referring to Jasper. It was an all-colored gem. A gem that had everything in it.
Was the Jerusalem Bible...
Jasper is a type of precious stone. I was supposed to bring a book. I should have brought it, but yeah.
Was the Jerusalem Bible going off of the... original
King James Bible.
Oh, the King James.
It's off the King James. That's what it's supposed to be based on.
Jasper isn't purple.
Jasper is what?
Isn't purple?
Jasper is all colors, meaning there are jaspers can be any color. First of all, you should know, all precious stones can be different colors based on the other chemicals or something else that's with it when it's being grown. If you have another chemical or another something with it, it can become any color in the world. All these things. Their lab doc and emerald does not have to be green. Just the green diamonds are called emeralds. That's just what they're called. It's like, that's how most of these things are. Jasper is a general name, and it's got subcategories that go with it. So here we go. The Binyamin stone was Yashpeh. It is Jasper. It's called it because Yesh Peh. He had a mouth. He knew what happened with Yosef HaTzadik. He knew Yosef HaTzadik was sold, but he never told anyone anything. He had a mouth, and he did not use it. Shaul HaMelech had a mouth, and he didn't use it. After he met Shmuel and Avi for the first time, and he was anointed as king, he met his uncle, and his uncle said to him, what happened to you? Where were you? Where have you been? And he was silent. He was silent. He said, Dvar HaMelucha Lo Higid. He refused to tell over the word of what happened to him, that he became king. So do I Esther. The Ain Esther Magedes Samah. Esther, who comes from Shevet Binyamin, would not tell over her people. She would not say anything over. That's the remnants from the word Yashpeh. The beauty of Binyamin, what they had, is that they silenced themselves. They did not speak even though they had a mouth. That's what it means, that it's all colors. It was everything. He knew everything, because the greatest thing that a person can have is shtika. That's what Akash Baruch was trying to tell me by me losing my voice this whole week. The best thing that a person can have...
The woman from Binyamin.
The best thing that a person can have is by far... Yeah, that's not what she said. But regardless, and I'm sure... Yeah. Anyway, that's that. The best thing that you could have is that. This is why Mordechai was Zocha to beat Haman. You know why Mordechai was able to beat Haman? More than any other Gadol living at the time. You know who was living at the time of Mordechai? I'm going through it. Ezra, Nehemiah, Yishmael, Kohen Gadol, Shimon HaTzadik, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, possibly Yechezkel, possibly Yirmiah, Baruch Ben Neriah. How about all these guys? Why is Mordechai the only guy mentioned? Mordechai is the only guy around at the time of the story. Why was Mordechai Zocha? Why did everything happen to him? The pshat is because by Mordechai, he was from Shevet Binyamin. He was Zecha because he was silent. Haman's power was in Lishna Bisha, Lashon Hara. There's no one that knows Lashon Hara like Haman, says the Gemara Megillah on Daf Yud Gimel. And in order to defeat the power of Lashon Hara, you have to be silent. That's the pshat. That comes through Shevet Binyamin, Yashpeh, to not be Megalasod. So what do you do on Purim? You drink. Nichnas Yayin, Yatza Sod. All year long you should be silent. On Purim is when you let forth those things that should be coming forth fed. That's what you end up doing. That's the difference. And at that time when you're Yatza Sod, that's when you don't know the difference between Baruch Mordechai and Ar Haman. Because you look at Mordechai, you look at Haman, and you say, what's the difference? Today, I can speak between the Lashon that Haman kept speaking and the silence that Mordechai kept having. That's the pshat behind it. That's the difference between the two, and that's the idea behind the Ashpeh. All these stones are a massive power. What are they? What did they do? And what do we need them for? Art school doesn't even bother translating them. I have this sheet to be able to give you guys to at least know what these stones were. To at least you get a little bit. I know you're probably not going to know what Berekis is. Smara God. I have absolutely no idea what that is either. I couldn't find it when I looked it up online. I couldn't find anything about it. You can look at the Living Torah, written by Rav Aryeh Kaplan. Rav Aryeh Kaplan is a tremendous parish that goes through every parish on what the stones were, all the different translations and everything between them. It's absolutely unbelievable. CL defines each one of these stones. But the Rabbeinu Bechaya says each one of these stones contains a special property that represents that shavit. Ogham, the very first one, which is either cornelian or a ruby, some type of red jewel. Here's what it was. It has a skula that you don't miscarry. Even nowadays, there's a gemach in Chicago for non-miscarriages to wear a ruby around your neck. There's a ruby gemach. There's an actual ruby gemach here. But that's the idea. Reuven got the dudaim. He's the one that brought those mandrakes from the field to give it out. And his pshat was Reuven was into tshuva. He can turn you around when it looks like you're going to miscarry. It looks like the person is going to die. He was able to do tshuva to turn the person around. That's Reuven. Pitzigah is a green jewel. It's supposed to be like an emerald. It cools off people who have it. It keeps them away from Znus, which is exactly what Shimon needed. Shimon lost 24,000 men when the Benos Midian came to Bnei Yisrael. So he specifically got this jewel to be able to represent him, to cool him down when he gets hot. Berekis is a yellow jewel, which is either some type of crystal or some type of topaz, something like that. What was it? This skula Berekis, machgimas pasi. It makes those who are not wise. It lights up your eyes. And if you grind these types of stones into a drink, it makes you smarter. That was given over to Levi, who needed that chokhmah to teach Klal Yisrael what they needed to do. Nofek was a very dark red. For Yehuda, it was a carbuncle, according to these perushim. It makes people scared of you, and it turns them backward. That's the school of a carbuncle. It turns people backward, which is exactly what Yehuda needed going to war. Sapir is a sapphire. It's blue. It's good for the eyes. Like the Torah, is Meir Einayim, that lights up your eyes, that's given to Yisach. And it also helps swelling and hurting, because if you're hurt, the best thing to do is to be able to learn Torah. That's the best thing to be able to help you, except for my voice right now. Yalom, bluish green or clear, bluish gray, I should say, bluish gray or clear, was probably a diamond. It helps bring you sleep. It's needed for a person like Zvulun. Zvulun, who went out in business all day long, who was always thinking and always worried about his ships and his parnassa and everything. He needs to sleep at night. He had the diamond to help him sleep, to help him rest when he needs that rest. The Leshem is bright orange with an upside down picture in the middle of it of a human being. It was either a jacinth or a ligure. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
No one agrees on this one.
Sorry? No, there's not. Everybody's all over the place on this one. But it's an upside down picture. The pshat is because Dun, Shevet Dun and Pesel Micha, they turned around the Rachmim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why they got this jewel which is turned around. Shvo was given over to Naphtali. It was gray/bluish and seems to be a beautiful stone that's called agate. It helps riders stay on top of horses. I'm not so sure why Naphtali needed that. It seems Rabbi Bakai says Naphtali is the lashon of chibur. Naphtulti means to be attached. And that's what it means, to attach the horse to the rider. But I don't know why specifically that. Achlama, he's purple. It's a type of amethyst or something called a calf's eye. It makes you brave in war. It's a lashon of chazak. Gad was the one, when he went out to war, he used to swing his sword so that it would cut off the arm and the head of his enemy at the same time. Tvoth zroa afkad kod is the bracha of Gad. That's what he needed in war. Tarshish is the color of olive oil, some type of chrysolite or beryl, something like that. Tarshish was that. Its skula is to digest food well, to make the person beautiful, and to make the body beautiful. Usher had daughters that were beautiful. May Usher Shmeina Lachmo, they say that his daughters were the best. I forgot what the wording is. Mibnos Asher, Taivi Mibnos Asher. I don't remember what the exact wording in the pasuk is, but it's a reference that his beauty, that Usher's daughters were the most beautiful woman in the land. That's why she had specifically this, to be able to make them more beautiful. Shoam is black. It's onyx. It gives chen and favor to those who have it. That's Yosef Atzadik. That those who see Yosef Atzadik, he has favor in the eyes of everyone who sees him. And finally, Yashpe. All the colors, with the skula to stop blood from flowing. That's Binyamin Atzadik, who had an ability to speak and didn't speak. He caused blood to stop flowing. He never speaks Lashon Hara, which causes people to die. That's the koach of Binyamin and Yashpe and the jasper that was there. Those are the skulas of the different stones and where they come from. So in summary, Moshe, Noach, and Shase are neshamas from the same body, that Moshe's holy neshama cannot be affected anymore, and Bnei Yisrael have to be very careful around him. The Aron and the Menorah were Torah Shabbat Chav and Torah Shabbat Peh. That was the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu, who was real Torah Shabbat Peh, and Aron, which was just Svara. That's the difference between Moshe and Aron, that Moshe represented the Menorah itself, and that's the beginning of this week's Parsha. Yashpe is Binyamin, the schus of Mordechai, to be silent, even though you have a mouth, to be silent. And the schulas of the different stones of the Goshen, that's what they all stand for, and that's what they're referring to. Shkaya, guys. Have a good Shabbos.